And John Zatta with us. We're going to continue taking phone calls when we come back in a moment on Coast to Coast as we talk about his work in the valleys of the Noble Beyond in search of Sasquatch. And, of course, you can check in with us with your questions, maybe even your stories. We are back with John Zatta, and we are talking about his book, In the Valleys of the Noble Beyond, as we talk about Sasquatch. Lots of theories, John, about Sasquatch, that it's an extraterrestrial, that it's dimensional, that it's this primate mammal, this animal. I happen to think whatever it is, it's originated from this planet. That's my take.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, and I think, I mean, if they do exist, then I take a similar line. Although, yeah, I mean, my whole process of, you know, travel and talking to people and thinking and writing about this, I also opened myself up to, you know, other explanations and you know, I mean, I know this is not really that scientific, but, you know, sometimes I got the impression that, you know, perhaps also too there may be, you know, there may be an in-between explanation in the sense of, you know, maybe that there's something going on in areas of really, really powerful nature where, you know, the sublime or the transcendental, you know, emanations of like an old growth forest would, you know, maybe also cause some people to, I guess, trigger in their minds to kind of understand, you know, that natural power by creating a kind of a personification of it through this, you know, I guess symbol of a wild, you know, hairy humanoid. And so, yeah, it's the mystery for me is compounded by all of the different ideas and takes and explanations for it. And I mean, I wonder if also there isn't something that is causing this that is even that we can't even really imagine in the sense of an interplay between our minds and reality. I mean, I think there's an area of writing and of study. It's an old field known as, you know, phenomenology. It's more of a philosophical kind of an approach to understanding consciousness and how we see the world and you know, perceive it. And I think I wonder if, you know, maybe either the answer or an answer may lie down that avenue.
It could be. It could be. Are you tipping any way personally in terms of your belief?
It's a tough question for me because I have this childhood thing with this whole mystery. So it's this kind of almost an emotional kind of connection to it. And I think a lot of people who are interested in the subject, whose interest goes back for, you know, a long time, especially to the books and to all of these trigger things from like films or TV shows, they also have it as well. So, I mean, I do want it to exist in a lot of ways. I don't think anyone wouldn't, right? I mean, it's a kind of, you know, a connection to mystery and into wonder and into, you know, something beyond our sort of normal mundane existence. And yeah, I mean, I sometimes find myself tipping towards it. And especially when I traveled back recently to the Great Bear Rainforest and met some of the people who I had spoken to and, you know, talked again about their experiences and even heard some new ones. And, you know, when you're there and you are in this landscape and in this environment, which is just immense and which is just powerful and magical, it's kind of hard to not imagine that these things possibly exist. And as somebody put it in Bella Coola on one of my earlier trips, he said offhandedly, like, if you can't imagine that there's a Sasquatch, then there's something wrong with your imagination.
Well, that's true. Let's go take some calls here for you. They're lining up. Frank in Hollywood, Maryland's with us. Hey, Frank, go ahead.
George, I'm lead-off batter tonight.
Yes, you are.
Usual for me. Mr. Zatta, you mentioned the $6 million man. Did you see that three-part episode where Steve Austin encountered the Sasquatch Bigfoot, turned out to be brought here by extraterrestrials? They made the robot. Otherwise, I believe 75 to 80% of the coast-to-coast callers have seen the real deal up there in the Pacific Northwest, Oregon, Northern California, wherever they roam.
Mm-hmm.
And these people know what you're talking about. How can you be in the woods 25, 30 years of experience and know a bear from a Bigfoot? Bears don't walk upright that far at a time. I've seen them on two or three national parks. I've never seen one walk upright more than 50 feet. Now, my theory on how they got here, I told George almost a year ago, the extraterrestrials brought them here as slave labor. You know how you take an animal and make them do what you want them to do?
Right.
Well, the Bigfoot, they rebelled against the extraterrestrials. They didn't like the menu. They didn't like the workload. So they decided to rebel. The extraterrestrials said they wouldn't have it. They said, well, we won't kill you, but we're going to punish you and leave you here on Earth after we're finished. So they left them here, a banishment, if you will. Now, my theory is no more preposterous than anybody else's. So that's what I got to say. And thank you, George, for 14 years of Coast to Coast.
17.
Radio program on radio.
All right. Thanks, Frank. The theories just keep coming, John.
Right. Well, I actually spoke with a cousin of mine who just earlier today before doing the show with you, and he I told him that I was going to appear on the show, and he knows of you, and he told me that he had heard a similar story about it's slightly different. There are variations on these types of explanations where the Sasquatch were brought down to then become the kind of taskmasters or the foreman of the humans, which then they would, whom they would get to mine gold for the aliens, because gold apparently reflects cosmic rays or something.
Exactly.
So yeah, there's so many stories about
great,
that.
Great. Are you convinced that they're seeing something?
Well, of course, yeah, for
okay.
Sure. I mean,
that's a big step.
No, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, it's, but the question is what and also it may not be the same in every case, right? So I mean I get into a little bit of the psychology of perception in the book and a psychology of belief, and because not an attempt to debunk it, I kind of thought to myself, you know, even if there is a Sasquatch, it's kind of a win-win situation. The reader gets to learn about why we believe what we believe, why we see what we see, and it might also explain a lot of those reports that even the Sasquatch people tend to dismiss. I mean, like I said before, there's a lot of, among some individuals, they tend to vet these reports that come to them quite strictly, right? So, it could be actually multiple explanations. It may not actually be one. So, but yes, I mean, I treated every story that I heard with a lot of respect. I listened really intently, and I was genuinely interested in almost all of them, because, again, like I said, the people who I spoke with on the trip, as your guest suggested or outright said when he called, they do know the difference between fauna.
Well, they sure do. Let's go next to whose turn is it? Let's try Carl in North Hollywood, California. First-time caller. Hello, Carl.
Hey, how you doing? I'm
okay.
So happy to be on your show, George. And this is a fascinating subject for me. My family, Bigfoot is in my family.
Ah, tell us about it. What happened?
Well, my great uncle is Jerry Crew.
Wow.
Yeah, that's my great uncle. I remember him telling me stories as a little kid. And my father, John, he was a cardiovascular surgeon. He logged his way through medical school with Jerry. And also my other uncle, Jim, my father's brother, they both logged during that time. And Peter Burns, who I've interviewed twice, I'm writing Jerry Crew's feature film right now about his life and everything about it, about the Bigfoot. And they're absolutely real. They're not alien thing. I thought you had L. Ron Hubbard on for a second ago talking about the aliens. I mean, the thing is that Peter Burns and Jim, my uncle, were hunting one time. They found a whole big thing, a tree with all this moss that was laid down in these giant strips where they were sleeping. They also found some fecal matter. And what they did was they took the fecal matter and they sent it to UC Berkeley. And the test that came back showed that it was, they couldn't identify what species it was from. It was either from a man or from an ape. The only reason they said that, because first of all, it was carnivorous. There was little bones of different animals in it, but there were parasites in it that were only found in human and ape, the fecal matter. So something's out there. It's not like, you know, I think that they have the ability to move much faster. I have a very specific theory on this that has to do with microevolution, not macro, micro. But anyway, just I've been hearing stories all my life. I literally, writing this script, I got to go through 40 years of yellowed articles that my Uncle Jim saved. And he went on to work at the Steinhardt Aquarium. And this guy was a cool uncle driving around a Harley, you know. But they were up there. My father used to water down the roads in Mount Shasta, you know, because the dust was so thick. He was teaching Jim how to do that. But Jerry Crew, man, he was like a church-going man. He was like taught. He was very involved with the Copa Indian children, teaching them Sunday school, didn't drink or anything. And everyone I've talked to from Peter Burns on has nothing but high respect for the men. He said he has integrity. And this guy could just fix anything, you know.
Well, like, they were right. They were right.
Yeah. So I'm just fascinated by all this, but I'm finding some interesting. Oh, have you heard of that guy Todd Standing?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. He's been
have
on.
Have you seen any of those pictures?
Great stuff.
Yeah, amazing. I mean, there's something there. Obviously, I don't believe it's supernatural. That's one thing that people, you know, they had those. Aliens and
right, or dimensional. Blah, blah, blah. He's coming, walking out of a dimension. I think it's physical creature here.
Right, it's definitely a physical creature. And this guy, Todd Standing, will take you out and show you, and no one will pay attention to him because, I don't know, for some reason they don't want to talk about it. But I am absolutely thrilled with what I'm finding, and we're gonna
keep it up. At what point, John, do we really get the answer? When does it happen? What's the breakthrough going to be?
It's a good question. I mean, again, going back to the whole flesh and blood thing, I mean, it will be something as accidental and random as, you know, the Patterson film, in terms of actually like a truck hitting one or something, or a hunter finally, you know, shooting one kind of thing. So I mean, it's going to be something like that, and I don't know if they are, you know, clearly if they exist, and they are, you know, rare and elusive and calculating and self-aware. I mean, it may be, you know, and if they exist, it may be some time before, maybe a while yet. And so, I mean, I lean towards the scenario of a totally random, unexpected accident if one does get brought in.
Yeah, I think so, too. It is bizarre, though, over how many years, even in the Himalayas, where the Yeti is the same, except, you know, it's white to fur, why they haven't found bones of these creatures.
Mm-hmm. Right. And again, you know, the explanations tend to lean towards, you know, decomposition. I mean, in the Pacific Northwest anyway, in those forests and you know, the acidic nature of those environments and bodies and critters coming and breaking down everything. And yeah, and I mean, I think in Nepal, you've got, there is the higher alpine elevations where you don't have, you know, forest or any tree cover. But I think, you know, I was speaking with Daniel Taylor, who did a lot of research, I guess like 6 decades worth of research looking into the phenomenon. He's one of the proponents of the bear theory. He spent most of his time, I think, in sort of lower elevation valley jungles, and again, if there is such a creature out there, or there still is, or it would be in, you know, in the tree cover basically, and if they do die, again, some kind of a decomposition, or, you know, there's even people who talk about them burying their dead, and I mean, yeah, I mean, it's an area really rife for all kinds of speculation, isn't it?
It sure is. Now, your book is very thorough, but there are going to be some proponents of Bigfoot who would have liked to have had you say definitively it exists. Have you come into that resistance yet?
Well, no, I haven't really gotten a whole lot of feedback. I expect that, of course, those who, you know, who are who've spent their entire lives working on this subject and who are proponents for the creature will, of course, weigh in such a way of, you know, no doubt, right? So, and you can't blame them. Again, I'm, you know, the point of my book actually was to, you know, when I set out to write it, I chose a different niche. I mean, the majority of Sasquatch books are pushing for the existence, and they're done by, you know, all these different sort of field researcher people and, you know, evidence and that kind of thing. You get a small proportion that are, you know, debunker type, you know, a couple of debunker type books and skeptics. And I wanted to write a Sasquatch book, essentially, that is a travel log, a travel writer's book. It's more of a story, and because that's what I am. I don't have any pretensions about being, you know, a Sasquatch investigator, although I have done Sasquatch investigation. I'm not a field researcher, but I'm a travel writer, and I tell stories, and I go to remote places, and I, you know, spend time in cultures, and I meet people, and I'm a curator of characters and tales, and so that is my contribution to the field. I'm not trying to debunk anyone, and I'm not trying to overturn anyone's theory. I wanted to go and see what would happen, and I've written a book based on my travels that explores the subject from a very regional perspective, but is also about more than the Sasquatch, because I want the reader to come out of a book. And if you're going to sit down and read my book and spend, you know, days or weeks with it, I want to give you as much of a place as possible beyond the core subject. And so I'm hoping that whoever, you know, picks up the book will get Sasquatch plus, plus, plus.
Let's go to Mimi in Midland, Texas. Hi, Mimi, go ahead.
Hello, George, and to your guests as well.
Hello?
Yes. Hello?
Yeah.
Hi.
Okay. What you would call an interesting take on this. I have never seen one, but my son called me one day with a story. He's a prepper, a great outdoorsman, and a hunter. And he had gone on a hunting trip with five other men. One of them brought their grandfather on what they considered his last hunting trip. But that night around the campfire, after the first day, they began to all talk about Bigfoot. And some believed, some didn't. And this elderly gentleman who was in his late 80s listened to all of it. At the end of their debate about it, he suddenly spoke up and said, "These are not beasts." He said, "They are part of us, even though they haven't really developed." And he said, "They are the descendants of Cain."
Well, they've taken a little biblical twist there, haven't they?
Yes, and I had just a visceral reaction to this, and I've believed it ever since.
There's some people who have said that happens too. Well, we're going to come back in just a moment and take some final calls with John Zetta as we talk about his work in the Valley of the Noble Beyond in search of the Sasquatch. We'll tell you where you can get the book too. His website, Lex has it linked up at coasttocoastam.com. It's his name, John ZADA.com. Back in a moment with final calls on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. John Zetta with us. John, those that are interested, where could they get your book, In the Valleys of the Noble Beyond?
In the United States, it's been released. So basically, any bookstore, online, Amazon, all the major book carriers have it. So they just have to, you know, go on to Amazon or to their favorite online bookstore or their local bookstore and just ask for it. In Canada, the book will be in stores around, I think, the end of July, but the official publication date is not till the end of August, which means that for Amazon orders, they're not going to be able to get it in Canada until late August or end of August or even early September, but they will be able to get it in bookstores before. It's just a kind of a publishing strategy thing.
Excellent. I've done a couple live shows, by the way, at the Queen Elizabeth Theater in Toronto.
Oh, yeah, right,
right. Place.
You come up to Toronto a lot?
I come up there every 3 years, maybe.
Right. Okay.
It's a great town.
You're from- from Detroit, I think.
Yeah, born and raised. Okay. Used to go to Windsor a lot.
Right, right. Okay.
Love our Canadian neighbors. And how was Canada Day for you folks on Monday?
Great. I mean, in Toronto, the weather was pretty amazing, and everyone was outside doing stuff. And after, I mean, our summer was a little bit late, so I think the onset of the beautiful weather really kind of made the Canada Day celebrations that much more sweeter here.
Did you learn anything new by writing this book and doing the research that you did for it?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, in terms of Sasquatch-related stuff, there was just the experience of going out there to talk to the people and do the actual research, and that was a really new thing. But beyond that, I mean, I learned about nature, about, you know, the coastal rainforest. I spent so much time out on the ocean, on the water, and with people who, you know, I'm sure a lot of guests who live, a lot of your guests who live in remote regions, a lot of your listeners who live in some
of our guests do too.
Yeah. It's the 4:45 a.m. syndrome. I'm sure they'll relate that in order to live in those regions, you have to be really self-sufficient. You have to be like a handy person, and so you know, being a city guy, I'm like a city slicker, right? So I mean, I'm not really Mr. Handyman, and you know, the level of upkeep that you have to do living in, you know, in a condominium is nothing compared to, you know, being in these places where nature is constantly, you know, trying to break down your home and bring it, you know, back to basics again. And so it was really kind of neat to you know, just be around those types of people. It was such a different environment, and to go to a place which is essentially in the same country, yet so radically different a lifestyle was a really incredible experience.
Let's go to the phones again. We pick it up by going to Charlotte, North Carolina. Fred's with us. Hello, Fred.
George, you said something, I've got the answer for you. You said something in one sentence a while ago. You brought up Yeti and not finding any bones.
Right.
Now, I'm there with you. If you'll give me some time, I'm going to stun you. If you'll pull up on the computer, Shelby, North Carolina Bigfoot is covering up with stuff. A woman, Vicki Cook, is feeding six or seven of them in her backyard now. And if you'll give me a minute, I'll give you the whole story.
Yeah, give me the story, and what's the site? I'll look it up later after the show.
I'll get to Shelby, North Carolina Bigfoot. Now,
okay.
Now, it's 60 miles from Charlotte. I'm an old guy. I've got dry eye disease. I'm in a clinical study. My eyes were just being ruined a few months back, and the study has a young eye doctor over there, they put dye in my eyes of different kinds, so a good friend drives me over.
Okay.
Otherwise, I wouldn't have had any reason to go to Shelby, 60 miles away. Well, I had polio in my throat, so I have to eat slowly so I don't choke, so I figure I'll do something worthwhile, so I flip the paper and read glance at every little headline, every page in the morning while I'm eating slow breakfast.
Okay.
And a month and a half ago, there's a story in the Charlotte paper of a man who says, I see a Bigfoot coming across the road at Shelby. And a week and a half later, another man reports in the Charlotte paper. They print a story. A guy says he was going along the road, looked down in a field, saw this hairy thing, got out, thought it might be a bear, but it was a Bigfoot leaning over, pulling up roots. It saw him and started running into the woods. And he added, my wife doesn't believe me. So then on TV, here's this woman, Vicki Cook, and she said starting about March 15th, and we had tremendous spring rains, the most in 20 years. She's got a garden behind her little house out at the edge of the town, and there's these massive footprints in there. And the first time she saw one, she said she screamed and scared her to death. And they're real big, and there's six or seven of them, and she's decided she started feeding them, and she puts food out for them.
Jeez.
And there's five or six of them, and there's a local reporter, you can see him, he's scared because she's saying, they come out over here, and they go in the woods back over on this side, and she's walking that way, and he sure isn't a bear, and she just doesn't turn around. She just waves her hand and says, no, no, I've been through all that. And she puts out, they don't like bananas too much, but they like peanut butter sandwiches and candy, and their favorite food is peanut brittle. And in addition, she's gotten, her cell phone has gotten a couple of pictures of them, which you'll see on the video. Okay. They're kind of, you know, not the greatest. But she's called in some national guy showing up with a super fancy truck, and he's put cameras out, and he's gotten one real good video series of one.
Well, let me ask you, Fred, is there any chance that they could be hoaxed, somebody in a costume or anything like that?
Not this lady. You need to play this. No, no. And it gets better. Let me just tell you, don't forget, you saw two guys in another part of town and so forth. Now, I started asking the locals as soon as I see this. My friend didn't want to bring it up, but I started asking. Turns out, and I looked while I was on hold, and I'd heard about this guy and read about him 8 or 9 years ago and kind of dismissed him. The big out by his front porch, but the video I just saw, he starts out, he's standing there, and he's got this megaphone type thing, and he was trying to call some animal, and out came a 10-foot Sasquatch, and
Jeez.
They go to a deputy sheriff, who's pretty reliable sounding. He doesn't sound like a hillbilly much. And he said, well, it kind of scared me. This thing's 8 or 10 feet tall, really big. And then that was 10 years, 8 or 9 years ago. And then the people at the eye place, several of them are telling me, well, 8 or 10 miles away, there's a real heavily wooded area. And 2 or 3 years ago, there were so many sightings in the area that people put, somebody put T-shirts out about it. But you need to play this video, and let me just tell you this. As a high schooler, I did a snowman Yeti term paper in high school, and my uncle was number one in his class in an Ivy League school, went to China for years, and was head of foreign Eastern language at Harvard. And they would, when I was a kid in Cape Cod, they would bring him Mongolian tablets, 4,000 years old, 1 in 1/3 billion people in Asia couldn't decipher, and he'd dust them off and translate them. And so when I was doing that, I saw a footnote, and it was my uncle for, you know, over in the Himalayas. And so I was kind of, when you see Edmund Hillary saying he pulled some binoculars out and saw one across the valley, I kind of believed in him in the last, you know, at first. But like you, with no bones the last 20 years, I'm thinking, this makes no sense. Why hadn't we found bones? Now, the fecal matter, I don't understand when they're here. But I think your thing about the UFO people maybe bringing them from a planet that some other people were trying to destroy, this is the most similar. If they're able to make them disappear, it would make more sense. But no, I'm going to go. We got to go back over this next Saturday, and I want to try to go by and meet the lady.
All right. During one of our open lines, let us know, and we'll try to track her down, too. Fascinating, John. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting story in a lot of detail. And where exactly was this? I missed that.
Shelby, North Carolina.
Okay, yeah, there's a lot of activity up around there.
This could be something, especially if they have it on video, huh?
Hmm.
That's what we need. We need that kind of authenticity.
Good. Well, I mean, I think more than video, like really, really, really good.
Got to authenticate it.
So that's, yeah.
Let's take another call or two. Let's go next to Barry in Calgary, your neck of the woods on the other side, east. Hey, Barry, go ahead.
Yeah, hi, George. Thanks for taking my call. Happy Independence Day to the U.S.,
sir. Well, thank you, sir.
Appreciate all the great shows, man, all the people behind the scenes, too.
Thanks, Barry.
Changed my life. John, I was wondering if some of the interviews you do with folks, are they seeing UFOs around or orbs? And if so, what sort of percentage, like, would that be in the sightings? And also, what about all the wildfires that we're getting here, all over the world for that matter, but especially BC and Alberta, you know, maybe these big guys are running out of the bush, the firefighters might be seeing them?
Mm-hmm.
And I'll take my answer off the air, and God bless you guys.
All right, Barry, thanks. What about the orbs?
Yeah, I didn't get a lot of, you know, supernatural phenomena, UFO-y, orb-y type stuff in any of my discussions with people on the Central and North Coast. And that, of course, doesn't necessarily mean that nobody sees them, but that never actually came up. So, I wasn't really asking about that. I mean, I know that that's in my estimation, it sounds like that's something, a more recent development. You didn't hear that so much in a lot earlier reports. But, yeah, so there's nothing on that front. Unfortunately, I have nothing to report on that. But and in terms of the wildfires, I through, you know, various grapevines that I'm, you know, connected to on, you know, social media and other people and whatnot, I mean, there has been rumors of firefighters in British Columbia. Over the last, like, they've had some really bad fires there over the last few years, and there's been some talk about them these individuals, these people working on those front lines, you know, seeing stuff. But again, I don't have anything conclusive to relate on that front. But I have heard
a portion of your book talks about psychology, perception. I find that interesting.
Right. So again, you know, I wanted to, you know, explore. You know, if you're going to do an investigation into this phenomenon, you can't really do a proper one without looking into, you know, the machinations of the human mind and the psychology of perception and the psychology of belief and conviction and everything. So I spent you know, quite a few chapters, you know, woven into the narrative, kind of looking at, you know, how we, you know, see what we see, how the mind processes reality, and, you know, through pattern matches, and, you know, looking at, you know, how do we come to adopt the beliefs that we believe. And so I go through all of these different, you know, ideas and theories, including, you know, even altered states. You know, what is it like to spend a lot of time in a forest, for instance? What does that do to your mind, right? And, you know, like, you know, Albert Osman, the guy who got kidnapped, this old story from 1924 in Toba Inlet, like, I mean, doesn't matter what you believe, whether he was kidnapped or not. I mean, he was out there alone for like a month, I think. And so, I mean, could that in some way have affected what he saw and what he thought happened to him? I mean, so that is an essential part of this topic.
Yeah, you have to add that in. You definitely do. The name of the book, In the Valleys of the Noble Beyond, In Search of the Sasquatch, by John Zada, Z-A-D-A. John, thank you for being on the program. You did a great job as a first-time guest, and, you know, update us on situations on Medicare out there, of course. And thanks for being part of our Independence Day program. We'll be live again for you tomorrow. And, of course, this is kind of traditional. America is now 243 years old. No country like it. Glad we're here. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, Tim Banal, and George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.